Good morning, everybody. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. It's Elder Care Radio, only on News Radio 890-925-KDXU. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
This is Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care on a fabulous Wellness Wednesday. Wonderful Wellness Wednesday. Let me go with that. Wonderful Wellness Wednesday.
Absolutely.
And this is Elder Care Radio, and we are excited to be here today. You know, we
Did
always...
Do you want to give anybody your telephone number and website?
Oh, maybe? We could do that first. I'm sure you all have had questions all week that you've been waiting to ask, and so the phone number is 435-477-6999, and simplest number in Southern Utah. It's 477 on the left of the keypad and 6999 on the right. You can tell everybody that you know about that phone number. And, of course, our website is pathwayhospicecare.com. You're welcome to go there. But mostly, we would encourage you to get answers direct and call us and talk to us. And if there are things that we can do, we want to help you out. You know, in this program, we always try and bring information that's useful and valid and meaningful so that people can live and enjoy their best life, okay? And especially on the older side, elder care, because we've always said...
we're elder care.
That's right. That's us. We are part of the wrinkly crowd, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And we've always said that medical care needs to adjust as we get older. And we've given examples in the past of, you know, the difference between the recommendations for a 30-year-old and a 80-year-old. And if those recommendations are the same, we might want to wonder why, you know, on all levels. And so today we've got this, so I'll kind of go through and explain. I being, you know, not of ideal health, cholesterol.
What does that mean, Richard?
Well, I'll use this one example. Cholesterol has been an issue that's come up a lot. You know, I go to the doctor occasionally, not very often.
Well, but you should explain. So when we were lean and thinner, we were healthier, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
If you're overweight or underweight, or if you have had really bad diet, as far as the kind of foods you have, or if you smoke or drink,
or stress,
anything
or
like that.
Genetics are bad.
Genetics, all those things.
It can cause problems, right? And, you know, Richard and I once were thin, and we've kind of let ourselves go a little bit, and it has caused some problems.
Kaylee still looks pretty good, Richard. I don't know about
she
you.
She is fabulous.
they're just being nice.
But, so, I've always had, you know, I've had my blood tested, and quite often they say, well, you know, your cholesterol's high. You know, your low-density lipid proteins are higher than they should be, and your HDLs aren't as high as we'd like them to be, and we have drugs for that. And I've, you know, in my early days, I was okay with, okay, well, I'll figure that out later and work on it.
Well, you start to feel the effects, don't you? After, you know, you start to feel some cloudiness, some discomfort.
Yeah, so...
You notice some things.
So as we've gone through this, and I've done a little research, and, you know, the medical community has been very clear that, well, if you have high cholesterol, we have drugs for that, and there's actually three different kinds of drugs that we can use, and there may be a combination of those. But as I was looking recently, because this is another question that's come up, now I also want to say that I've talked to some doctors who say, well, yeah, high cholesterol, but not that big of a deal, right? So there's really two sides to the medical community on that. And so I've kind of vacillated in the middle. And so then I was just looking at it again, you know, as I'm approaching 60. I thought, well, let's take another look at this. And at first I was looking, okay, so what's the history of these drugs, statins and other blockers or whatever, and the discovery of cholesterol? Well, it turns out that cholesterol, while it wasn't called that, you know, they had some idea of it in the 1500s. It's been around a long time in medicine, and it's been an issue. But it wasn't until about the 70s that this started to become a real hotbed of information because, again, the medical pharmacy companies came up with solutions to these problems. So then it started becoming a hot topic of conversation. And it kind of, you know, peaked out in the 90s, and it's kind of waned a little bit because I think most everybody is, you know, done with the discussion and they're just following the regimen. So as I was looking through and finding this information, it's interesting that there's a range of people who statins seem to be appropriate for, and the range is 40 to 75. Now, 40, I get, we're getting a little older, but 75, that there's an end to this statin thing that was kind of a surprise to me. And so I started looking as to why is there an end range? And, you know, articles pop up if you're looking for them. And so let me just start with some information from one of the articles. This is just a continuation. But for older people, there is no clear evidence that high cholesterol leads to heart disease or death. We'll start with that statement. Hmm. Now, if we go back and look at, so if you were young and you had this buildup of cholesterol over time, right, and people, genetic predisposition or other contributing factors, have had heart attacks or death because of cholesterol, then we jump to the conclusion that everybody who has cholesterol is going to have a heart attack, although mm-hmm. we know by the numbers that's not the case. But as we get older, once we've reached a certain point, if we haven't had a heart attack because of cholesterol, it's highly likely that
we're not going to have a heart attack
because of cholesterol. So that was an interesting point. In fact, some studies show the opposite, that older people with lowest cholesterol levels actually have a higher risk of death. So cholesterol isn't necessarily bad. In fact, we've known since the beginning of time that cholesterol is a key component in our health. It is the way that we transfer fat and other things through the body, and it's important in many processes. So that was something to consider. I'm not at 75, the end point on this, but some of us in this community are, and so that's why we want to bring this up. So compared to younger adults, older adults are more likely to suffer serious side effects from using statins. So if you are on a statin right now, we're not saying you need to get off of it today. What we're saying is you should talk to your doctor, because statins can cause muscle problems such as aches, pains, or weakness. Mm-hmm. Rarely they can be a severe form of muscle breakdown. And I'm just going to read through this and then we're going to talk about it. In older adults, statins can also cause falls, memory loss and confusion, nausea, constipation, and diarrhea.
Isn't that what we all call aging?
Yeah. I mean, we think, oh, well, you're just getting older.
Yeah.
And so
memory
this
loss,
is the kind of
confusion.
Stuff that happens. But is that really the case? Is it because we're getting older, or because we have a medication in our body that is now not doing what it was intended to do? It's doing something different.
And it's not necessary, apparently.
Often, I think that the point is really that we keep saying you have to advocate for yourself and you have to know the questions to ask. There, we are no longer in a day and age where we can just, you know, go to our local town doctor and just lay everything at his feet, because he's got thousands of patients to care for and he won't know the details of your history, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be unrealistic to expect him to remember details of your medical history. That's up to you. So you have to be prepared when you get to the doctors to ask questions and know the questions to ask. And that's really why we're bringing this up.
Right. And there are thousands of illnesses. And while a doctor may have, you know, a good core knowledge of some of that stuff, they are always going back and referencing just general best practice.
Well,
and this is the part that we've always
dynamic, right? Yeah.
But this is the part that we've always kind of were concerned about, is that the decision about best practice that becomes universal against all age groups is no longer best in every age group. And so while statins may have a good place for those people who specifically have a history of heart attacks in their family, or stroke, or mini strokes, what are called TIAs or transient ischemic attacks, we'll just throw all that jargon out there, then maybe statins are an ideal best practice. But if you don't have a family history of strokes or heart attacks, and you don't have a genetic predisposition to those problems, then maybe we should reevaluate the use of statins to determine if that's really the best practice. Now, we know the best practice includes eating better and exercise. Right. We can all agree to that.
At a minimum, we should be asking our doctors and pointing out the details. I don't have any heart attack in our genetic Act's history. And so I just want to ask, is this the best protocol for me? Should I be on statins given the side effects? I think it's funny, you know, as we were talking about this preparing for the show, I said, how often do you go to the pharmacy to pick up your medications? And they say, are you familiar with this med? And we just say, yes. Or do you want the counseling? And we just say, no.
Do you have any questions? Do you know how to use it? Well, I think I put it in my mouth and I drink some water, and that's all I need to know about these meds, isn't it?
Yeah. Right, right. We should probably listen a little finer, right?
Yeah, be willing to gather that information. We hope that we can be part of that, you know, sharing of information. But the more knowledge you have, the better your care will be. I can't imagine that there's a scenario in which knowing how your body is doing is worse than not knowing, even for the doctor. The doctor would rather have your input. He'd like to know what are the things that are an issue for you. And maybe you never thought, you know, okay, let's review your drugs. And you never thought to say, you know, I'm having a brain fog that's just, you know, much worse than it used to be. Or I tend to be falling now. Or, you know, I feel a little nausea or constipation or diarrhea. Nausea, constipation, or diarrhea. It could be any of those. And they could all apply to the statin drugs. We're not saying it. That's the only cause.
Right. But what if the memory loss and confusion was simply the medications that you were on versus an actual loss of brain capacity? If it was something so simple as, you know, being on a statin drug that is no longer beneficial to your body because you've aged and things are different, you're processing things differently, or your needs for the levels of cholesterol have changed, then, you know, what's the harm in asking?
There really isn't. In fact, I'm going to go through a few of these specific facts. So read that article. I thought, wow, that's a pretty interesting article, but I want to verify that. So we go back to the source, and that's the NIH.
And who's NIH?
The National Institute of Health. Right.
Doctors that's our, rely on that heavily.
Right. That's our federal government's warehouse of medical information.
Right.
And there's just I just pulled the abstract out of this article, significance of cholesterol levels in patients 75 or older. In subjects older than 75 years, being in lower quartile of cholesterol, insulinemia, anyway, or serum albumin concentrations is associated with increased mortality. Let me go back on that. Being in the lowest percentage of cholesterol levels, okay? So we've all been told, let's get that cholesterol as low as we can. Let's get it as low as we can. Let's say you win that race and you are at, you're in the bottom one-fourth of people in the country at your cholesterol level. You have increased your likelihood of dying.
Wow. That's
we don't hear that, do we?
Counterintuitive, isn't it?
We don't hear that, yeah.
So cholesterol levels below 189 milligrams per deciliter is in subjects
older than 75.
Yeah, should be considered an early sign of unidentified comorbidity or of rapid functional decline.
Wow.
So when you're getting your cholesterol tested and you are below 189, then that's a problem. We should be above that. And there's a buffer. There's no ideal number, but certainly there are some ranges in there. HDL cholesterol levels rather than total LDL cholesterol were inversely associated with increased mortality from ischemic coronary disease or stroke as the HDL rises. And again, counterintuitive because we've all been told, let's get our LDL down and our HDL up. But as we get older, that has to be reversed. So if you are on statin drugs, we encourage you to talk to your doctor. If you know somebody who is older, you know, parents, grandparents, and they are on statin drugs, encourage them to talk to their doctor.
And they're having some of the symptoms, especially. Before we just rule that, you know, perhaps they have dementia or Alzheimer's or that their body's shutting down, perhaps we should review their meds first and see if we can make life a little better for them.
Right. And what happens if you go off a statin drug for a little bit? I mean, these are intended to be long-term therapies. Yeah.
Right.
Long-term therapies. Well, if we start you today, over the next 20, 25 years, we will hopefully keep your cholesterol levels down a little bit so that it doesn't build up to a point that could cause a problem. But when we're 85 years old, is the potential of a heart attack in 25 years really on our radar? Or is it living our best life from here on out? So 75 is the age in which they say we should make that change. But the studies all point to ages earlier than that as probable good reasons. But, you know, so it's that balance. They've generally decided, well, the risk of, you know, heart attack or stroke is high enough that we will encourage people to take statins, but that doesn't necessarily account for your specific circumstances. So if you know somebody who's having a hard time getting around, if they're, you know, they're getting a little more memory loss or seem confused more, their day-to-days are harder, maybe they should, you know, look at those drugs. And we hope we've made that clear, that take a look at your drugs and talk to your doctor and see if it's still appropriate. Know what the numbers are. Make sure that you're up there. Oh, the other thing that we forgot to mention, statins may increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. Hmm. I mean, does anybody have diabetes in this town?
It like could, half of us?
Could it be that statins are actually contributing to that?
Right. That's shocking, right? I thought that was surprising when I read that.
Yeah. Contributes to cataracts?
Cataracts, yeah. That was surprised me too, wow. Because so many of us as we age start to develop cataracts. Is it the statins that are, you know, contributing to that?
Right.
It just never gave that thought.
So as well as to the damage to liver, kidneys, and nerves. I mean, livers, kidneys, and nerves, does anybody have those issues? And if they do, at least make the effort to check statins just to see if that's the case. We thought that was, you know, really interesting. I'm just going to throw out a few more numbers here. LDL concentrations below 106 milligrams per deciliter and HDL concentrations below 36 milligrams per deciliter were associated with increased risk of death. Again, subjects older than 75. HDL cholesterol levels above 35 appear to have a protective effect against ischemic stroke in subjects younger than 70. And this, again, counterintuitive. We're talking about younger than 70, not older than 75. But HDL levels above 35 appear to have a protective effect against stroke. So really reconsider that and talk at it. Now, if your cholesterol levels are high, statins are only one of a few options that are available. Maybe there's a discussion there. But I think you need to keep in mind what's the potential of the problem. Because instead of running around in fear, and we hope that nobody makes their decisions based on fear, but a lot of the marketing that we are exposed to is all about fear, right? Insurance, you know, oh, what happens if, you know, a catastrophic, you know, illness? So let's make sure that every year you're paying for all the medication that you might ever need or all of the medical care that you're not going to use. Let's make sure that in the one time out of 1,000 that somebody might need that, everybody's been paying for it all along. So with that information, we hope that we've made some changes. Now, the fear thing kind of brings us to another topic. And that is insurance. I've had a couple of conversations. I was at the senior center this week. We do blood tests, you know, general health checkups, and we're more than happy to have you come. But I had two people approach me with questions about insurance. One of those questions was, we are now in insurance season, right, for Medicare Advantage, and all of the ads are out there, and, you know, they have all of the actors telling you need to call this number, although it's always a different number. And the reason is because those numbers are all different insurance agencies trying to get your business. Okay. So you can call any of those numbers. There are plenty of websites that you can go to and give your information, and they're going to sell that to a bunch of insurance agents who are going to call and give you a really hard time trying to get you to buy whatever they are selling. We think that that's not the most effective way for you to get what is best for you. We do think you should do your research. Know what insurance what benefits you're really looking for. And I think if that's where we start, what are the criteria? What are the recommendations? Now,
that being said, though, Richard, I do have a couple of insurance agents, and they are, even for Medicare open enrollment, I do have a couple that I really, really trust. And so we do believe that you should advocate for yourself and know what needs you have. But, you know, getting advice is important, especially when we're stressed over trying to find the information.
True. Here's what I'm going to recommend first. My recommendation is, A, we're not going to give you a particular company that you should use because they're all different.
Sure.
But the first recommendation is find out what features and benefits they're offering and then make sure you use them. because it's not a savings plan. These insurance policies are not, they're not building up value for you in the future. You pay for it this year, and if you don't use it, all the money that you spend is gone. So every one of them has different features. There are ones that will, you know, will cover some of your drug costs, although many of them have a deductible. And you should really compare. Okay, so am I really using that much in medications? And maybe you're going to reduce your medications as you start looking at, you know, how some of them affect you. Is that really my primary cost issue? And if it is, then you can make a decision based upon that. But there are other features and benefits like vision and dental and travel, you know, transportation to and from medical visits or to get your prescriptions. Those are all things that can be important decisions to make. But if you're not going to use it, then don't include that in your decision making. So really look at what you are going to use your insurance for and decide which of these policies is best. I'm going to make a suggestion. While you can talk to a whole bunch of insurance agents and try and work that through, I will tell you that Medicare actually has on their website, medicare.gov, a place where you can compare plans with no high-pressure sales techniques and nobody calling and harassing you. So if you go to medicare.gov/plan-compare, okay, that'll take you right to their site. They are going to ask you, you can log in and they'll get your information, or you can do it anonymously. They're going to ask you for your zip code because plans vary based upon location. Not every insurance company covers every state, and not every insurance company provides the same care in every state. So you put your zip code in, and then it'll let you look at the plans that are available for Medicare Advantage or for Part D, you know, the drug part, or Part D and Medigap insurance and all those things. But you can actually compare the plans. They kind of lay out what the differences are in a pretty simple form. Probably a good way to start so that you can get a foundation of what you're looking at. You can then call any of those companies and talk to them directly. You don't need to have an agent do that. I wish that we could make insurance simple and fun, but it's not. And I think that's one of the things the insurance industry wants is for people to just give up trying so that they buy whatever is put in front of them. And we would highly recommend that you not do that, that you be an active participant. Again, live your best life. Do the things that are going to be in your best interest, not in somebody else's. And so that's really our goal here. And then the other question we had was on long-term care. Somebody had come to me and said, well, I've been paying for this long-term care insurance for a long time, you know, for decades, and how do I use that? And I think a lot of us think that we have to be put in a facility in order to take advantage of it. And very few people will ever take advantage of it at that level. But most of those policies do have the ability to draw against it for living in your home. There are ways to get a lot of help and care. And you should talk to your insurance company to find out how to take advantage of that. Really, make those calls. Don't put it off. Because you've paid into these programs. If you don't use them, then they did you no good. It doesn't have to be a catastrophic, life-limiting condition. But if life's a little harder and there would be things that you could use in your home that would be helpful and beneficial, then start using that insurance policy to do it. Because when you're paying for it, and you've been paying for decades, let's say, I was reading one article on it. It was very clear. It says, you know, for we only have a couple of minutes, so give me a call after this. Of the people that need it, 70% may need some type of critical care late in life. That doesn't mean a facility. It just means some kind of care, and that could be hospice. And their insurance doesn't have to pay for hospice. So they inflate those numbers. But they said, you know, some people have used it for 2 years, and a very few might have used it for 5 years. Well, when you look at the cost of that, if you were staying in a facility in St. George, you know, your monthly is $5,000 to $8,000. But people are paying those kind of dollars to buy this insurance, you know, for a couple, $5,000, you know, dollars a year or whatever, and you're never going to use it. So you've made that investment. So don't wait for catastrophe. Figure out how to take advantage of that right now. I had a gentleman who was doing all he could to get all the value out of his insurance that was available to him so that he could enjoy more of his life while he was there. So we really encourage that. Again, our telephone number, 435-477-6999. We look forward to seeing you next week, and it has been great. Give us a call.
By the way, tomorrow, St. George Senior Center, right?
Tomorrow, St. George Senior Center at 11 o'clock, and forgot this. We are going to be at the Catholic Church talking about all things palliative and important November 15th, and we will give you more information.